Hello, welcome to the podcast, Three Guys and Ken. I'm your host, Kenton Varman.
This is your boy, Cal Cook.
Johnny Schlenville.
And Trey Wentworth.
With today's episode, we will focus on the NCAA tournament. We'll start with the first question. Did Duke live up to the hype placed on them in this year's tournament?
Personally, I don't think Duke did live up to their hype. They were the number one overall seed in the entire tournament. Yes, they made it to the Elite Eight and lost that game by 2 points to a very good Michigan State team this year. But if you take a look at their games before that, they had a tough opening half in their first game. You take a look at their second game against UCF. This was a matchup that not many people expected to be close, but UCF had Taco Falls, which is a big factor when you have a 7-6 presence in the paint, and Duke's game is mostly in the paint. So I see why that game was close, but personally, I think Duke should have blown that team out. Then you go look at their Sweet 16 game against Virginia Tech. They won that game by 2 points. That's two close games they won by 2 points. And for them being the number one overall seed in the tournament, they should have blown those teams out. Shouldn't have even been close. Yes, they had the three biggest names. Zion played great as always. RJ Barrett had decent tournament. But Cam Reddish and Trey Jones, they did not have the best tournaments. And for being the top guard and being the top point guard and being the second best small forward in the class, you guys need to have better performances.
I mean, did Duke live up to the hype that they were, that their fans were giving them this year? I think yes. Hype, yes, they definitely lived up to it. Everybody was watching Duke play this year. Duke was by far one of the most exciting and energetic teams on the court this whole 2018-2019 season. They were ranked number one throughout almost the whole regular season, and then going in to the NCAA tournament, they were ranked in the number one overall seed. Did they even make it to the Final Four? No, they didn't win the finals. They were knocked out in the Elite Eight. But hype, I think they lived up to it. This Duke freshman class, everyone was comparing them to Michigan's Fab Five, one of the most known teams of all time in the NCAA world, which a lot of people know how that went. They didn't win their title either. But
fuck.
Johnny, when you say that this team is exciting and thrilling to watch, I agree with you. But when it comes down to it, in an organization, a team needs to win. And to keep being a successful organization, you need to win, take home those W's. And Cam Reddish did not play to the expectations as I thought he might play up to. What do you think about that?
Like I said earlier, Cam Reddish did not have the best games this tournament. He didn't even have the best season. He would still be a top three draft pick because of his skills and potential in the league that we're in. But Johnny, I want to go back to something you said. You said you think they lived up to the hype. Their hype this year was to win the championship. Coming in, they were projected to be the best team. They were the number one overall seed. They have two out of the top three draft picks, three out of the top five draft picks with RJ Barrett. How can you call that living up to the hype and having a successful season by not walking away with the championship and let alone not making it to the Final Four?
I mean, obviously this Duke team is going to be considered one of the best of all times, even though they didn't win the championship. Heck, they didn't even make it to the Final Four. People said this about the Kentucky team the other year with the amazing freshman class they had. I'll go back to comparing them to the Fab Five, which lots of people did from Michigan. The Fab Five didn't even win national title.
But they made it to the Final Four.
They did make it, but you're talking about the hype, the standards, the ideal goal for this Duke team was they were going to win it all. Some people thought this Duke team was going to go undefeated. They didn't even do that. That Kentucky team the other year with the freshman class they had was closer to that than they were.
Overall, as far as expectations go, I don't think that Duke lived up to the expectations. At the end of the day, you got to get home with a W or else nothing other really matters. This is a competitive sport, and I don't think Duke lived up to it.
Those were some very good opinions there. Okay, on to question number two. Which point guard would you rather have on your team, Cassius Winston or Carson Edwards?
I'm going to have to go with my guy Cassius Winston here, and I'll tell you why. He led his team to the Big Ten Championship this year, while also qualifying for the Naismith Finalist. He also grabbed the Big Ten Player of the Year and led his team into the Final Four. This guy is an unstoppable point guard because he gets his teammates involved and produces through the pick and roll with Xavier Tillman and gets everybody shots out on the outside perimeter. Also, he had a huge game against Duke this Final Four while going and getting 20 points and then 10 assists. He also did a very good job this season playing some very good defense. He was a good on-the-ball defender while getting through screens and not letting them pull past him to get easy buckets to the rim. He may not look like the most athletic point guard out there, but he makes up for it with his intelligence on the offensive, offense and defensive side of the court. What about you, Johnny? What do you think about Carson Edwards?
Well, you know, as much of a great point guard as Cassius Winston is and his ability on the court and what he does with his team, I got to go with Carson Edwards. I feel like this man's more ready to be playing in the pro league. He, compared to Cassius, if you were to send both of them up to the NBA right now, I don't see Cassius doing as well as Carson. Carson is an explosive player. You put the ball in his hand, he's going to put it in the bucket. Carson is a scorer. It's what he does. He may have not had the assists that Cassius had, but we're looking at a point guard. We're looking at a scorer. The NBA is all about scorers right now. People that can get buckets when they need to, and that's what they're looking for in point guards. Carson Edwards, that's what he does. You look at his last five games of the year. All but one game, he had over 25 points. And that was against Minnesota, a good defensive team in the Big Ten tournament. He was held to 11 and he had 6 turnovers. That was a bad game. Everybody has bad games. He also went 100% from the free throw line. The man's a shooter and he's clutch when he needs to be.
Now, Johnny, you say that Carson Edwards has a very good offensive game, but something that you didn't mention is anything about his defense. What's something that you might say that he's pretty good at defense at?
Carson Edwards, great defender. He's built, he's got the body, he can bang chests with the big guys. He's ready to take a charge. He can handle the pick and rolls, top of the keys, he fights through them. Carson Edwards is a good defender, and that is going to help him when he goes to the league.
You both make great points there, but if I had to go with it, I'd go with Carson Edwards, just from the fact that he's a pure scorer, and that transitions in the NBA the best. If you look at his first 3 seasons at Purdue, he averaged 10 points his freshman year, 18 points his sophomore year, and then 24 points this junior year. That is a pure scorer. That's what NBA guys like to see. He shoots a pretty good percentage from the floor. He shoots 39.4%, which is good, but it's not the best. Behind the three-point line, he's very dangerous, which is a huge part of today's NBA game. As we all know, NBA players, 50% of their shots nowadays are pretty much threes.
So along with guards in the NCAA, what would you rank him above the top 10?
Top 10 guards in the NBA. I'd definitely put Carson Edwards in the top 10. I wouldn't go top 5 yet.
Okay.
That's an interesting topic. It'd be fun to see a poll done by the fans and see who they would vote for. Now, on to the next question. Does winning the championship excuse Virginia for their loss last year against number 16 seed UMBC?
It sure does. You want to know why? Because this March Madness was a little bit different. Here you see Virginia down again to a 16 seed, but the difference was this year is that their leaders stepped up throughout big moments. First, you have to take a look at Diaké hitting those shots to send it into overtime versus Purdue. And then big-time guy, Kyle Guy, hitting the crutch free throws. That was just a good way of pure shooter stepping up and hitting his free throws. Now when we go to the final game versus Texas Tech. You see Hunter stepping up in the finals, hitting the outside shots. I think overall throughout this year, they stepped up and played more of a team ball. I think the obstacles that they had to get through was getting past that first game, the 16th seed, and then throughout there, they just trembled on and trained through every other team. I think that they're definitely improved, and their confidence was huge throughout this entire tournament. What do you think about that?
I just don't think winning the championship erases last year's loss. Last year, they were a veteran team. They had players return. They had three big-time guys return for them this year. They did lose two seniors, however. But I still believe that last year's loss is inexcusable. When you are the number one overall seed in the NCAA tournament, you can't lose to the 16th seed. Especially in the fashion that they did. Losing by 20 points to a team that no one's ever heard of. That's just inexcusable. Winning the NCAA tournament the following year, yes, it's an amazing story. It's an amazing comeback. But I just don't think it erases what happened last year. And if you look at their games this year, they got lucky. Yes, you need some luck to win the tournament. Against Auburn, refs missed a double dribble. Should have been Auburn's ball. They could have iced it then. Kyle Guy gets fouled. Three-pointer. He clutches it, makes all three with 0.2 seconds left. That's luck. It doesn't matter if they return. No one's from last year's team or everyone. This year's team doesn't make up for last year's inexcusable loss.
I gotta agree with Trey here. Yeah, it's a different team. You got different players, new people coming in, different starting five. I don't care. You're the number one ranked overall team. Imagine if Duke would have lost in the first round this year. People would have went nuts, especially after the year they had. That's almost identical to what Virginia had last year. They were the number one ranked overall team coming into the finals. They were by far one of the best teams in the entire tournament. And what happens? They did not come out to play, and they get blown out in the first round to a 16 seed. Inexcusable. I don't care if they won the tournament this year. I don't care if they won the tournament the year before that. You cannot let that happen.
So you mentioned officiating. What are you guys' thoughts on the officiating big moments in this year's tournament?
I didn't like it. I thought the officials tried to upstage the athletes, tried to take over the games. If you take a look back at the Duke-UCF game, Zion is fouled out with 30 seconds left by Taco Fall, taking him out the game. He's then at the free throw line, makes the first one, misses the second, and RJ Barrett gets the rebound and puts it back in. What the refs did not call on that was a hook and hold that should have put UCF at the line, because it's a technical foul at Duke, giving UCF a 3-point lead with 10 seconds left. Next, you can look at the Virginia-Purdue game. Final 30 seconds of the game, Carson Edwards shoots a three and a foul is called. This foul should have never been called because Carson Edwards kicked his leg out, initiating the contact, and then flopped. If this was never called, the game would have never gone to OT because Carson Edwards missed the shot, Virginia got the rebound, and they were just going to run out the clock. Johnny, what were your thoughts on the officiating?
Now, everybody knows that officiating can be a determining factor of the outcome of a game. Yes, you hear people always love to point the finger and blame the officials for why their team lost or why such and such happened. But there was a lot of cases during this NCAA tournament where you can see why people were pointing the finger. Think of the Virginia-Auburn game. That game, Virginia shouldn't have won. The referees were either going out of their way in certain games to make calls, or they were just blatantly ignoring calls to let the players determine the outcome, which a lot of people like to say, let them play, but
officials are out there for a reason. The Virginia-Auburn game, everybody knows that the officials missed the double dribble at half court. It was a pretty obvious double dribble. They call it, boom, Auburn ball. Virginia doesn't get to hit the three at the corner. Or they don't shoot free throws for Kyle Guy to clutch it and bring Virginia into the next round. Talk about how we were talking about Duke. Duke versus EFU. There was, in the last couple seconds, there was a lot that they didn't call. They just let it go. They let Zion be the bully that he is on the court. But there's a reason that they have those whistles in their mouth. They didn't give them, they didn't call the charge, and they didn't call the hook and hold. Officials were a big impact on this year's NCAA tournament. They were ignoring big calls, or they were making calls, putting guys in opportunities to win when they shouldn't have been there.
That's definitely an interesting topic. The officials in this year's tournament were one to talk about. Now, that brings us to our next question in the draft. Is there any chance Zion doesn't go number one overall?
I mean, everyone who's watched college basketball this past year and has followed up on Zion throughout his high school career, we all know he's ready to compete with the biggest and the best players in the league and in the world. You look at his size, his height, his weight, his ability on the court, and how he uses that size and weight to his advantage. He's ready to go up and bang it out with the pros.
Speaking long term, I mean, why wouldn't a team want to draft somebody like Zion Williamson? He's going to create players around him, and people are going to be wanting to play by his size. Some people may say he lacks perimeter around the rim or around the three-point line, but he's developing his shot, and that's definitely something he can practice in the outside during practices and scrimmages. It's not something that is a long-term, but he can definitely figure his way out. John, what do you have to aside from that?
Also, NBA franchises, they're not just looking for players for what they can do to help their team. They're also looking at franchises. They're looking about money. You got to remember, the pros, it's not so much about guys competing in just a sport nowadays. It's entertainment. It's franchise. Everything's about money.
When people turn on that TV, they're going to want to be seeing Zion playing, doing his dunks, doing his crazy 360 windmills. It's what the people want to see. It's promotion.
Exactly. Zion is by far one of the most exciting players to watch now and ever, or has ever been. Zion is a player that can bring in money. You looked at Duke's ticket prices this year. They were through the roof. Almost no other stadium was touching that. Towards the beginning of the season, when Duke was going on a run and nobody was stopping them, Duke Stadium had fans and students tenting up, lined up outside, waiting to get in. They were paying probably too much, but that's what Duke got, is they had Zion and RJ out there. They had a phenomenal team on the court, and that's where the money comes in. And that is what NBA owners are looking for. They're not just looking for a good team. They're looking for money.
I would actually argue that if the Phoenix Suns get the first pick, they will not take Zion Williams. According to Bleacher Report, they came out with an article saying that the Suns want a guard with their first pick, not another forward. They already have forwards on the roster like Dragan Bender, Mikal Bridges, Josh Jackson, Kelly Oubre. They all play the same position as Zion Williams. They're all young guys, a young core that they have drafted and they believe in. With that being said, they would most likely take Ja Morant. He is the second most exciting person in this draft class behind Zion. People don't know about him because he's from the small school, Murray State. You watch him in the tournament, he lit it up. He has a nice shot. He has the athletic ability like not many guards have. He's been compared to Russell Westbrook in the fact
of his athleticism. His shot's better than Westbrook's, which you like to see. He is definitely someone that would be nice with Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton. I think those three would be a great combination. And I definitely think the Suns would pass on Zion Williams if they had the chance at Ja Morant.
To keep the topic rolling with Zion, do you think Zion will have the biggest rookie endorsement deal ever?
I think yes. If you take a look at Zion, he is the biggest name since LeBron from coming out of high school, college, it doesn't matter. I'd say people are more excited about Zion being in the NBA than they were about LeBron. Right now, LeBron holds the biggest endorsement deal ever for a rookie from $93 million from Nike. I think Zion's going to blow that deal out of the water. According to Sonny Vaccaro, former marketing executive for Nike, Adidas, and Reebok, Zion's shoe deal is going to be $100 million, not a couple hundred dollars, like, not a couple million like everyone else's rookie shoe deals. Zion's going to blow this. He's going to set the new scene for shoe deals and sponsors for big names coming out of college, coming out of high school. People pay for entertainment. People want to see Zion in their shoes. Kids are now looking up to Zion. Everyone is seeing that Zion is the next LeBron James, name-wise. So kids look at Zion. They want to jump like Zion. They want to be like Zion. They're going to be like, Zion's wearing those shoes. I want to wear those shoes. Companies want that.
Even if he doesn't go number one overall, will that affect his rookie endorsement deal?
Not any at all. If he doesn't go number one, if he doesn't even go number two, people want Zion to be the face of their company. The reason being is he's an icon, if you will. Nike already went, as soon as he broke his Paul George's, Nike was at his campus the very next day. They want Zion Williamson to be satisfied and hit his Nike shoes and to be happy in their company.
Like I had said before, NBA teams are going to be looking at Zion for not what he can do for their team, but for the money he can bring in. And that's where these athletic gear companies like Nike, Adidas, Under Armour, whoever goes after him, that's what they're looking for too. We all knew what happened when Zion blew out his shoe and everyone's mind was blown, like, oh my gosh, is he going to be against Nike? What's going to happen to Nike after this? You know, right after that, companies like Nike and Adidas were going in the lab. They were getting their tech nerds together. They were finding out what they can do to make sure that doesn't happen again. They were making a high-quality shoe that we know is going to be coming out of the stores and off the shelves at a high price. We all know how basketball shoes and other athletic gear like that is getting more expensive. We all know you want to get Kobe's or some fancy Jordans, LeBron's. They're not exactly cheap. Not everybody wears them. Someone's going to be coming out with some brand new Zions. They're going to be top of the chart. You know they're going to have great support. They're going to be a high-quality shoe.
Zion has basically created a platform already. He flies through jumping from the free throw line. People are going to be wanting wearing his shoes. They were going to be wanting jumping from the free throw line, dunking, just like he is.
I think it's going to turn into the jump like Mike, be like Mike campaign, kind of, that Michael Jordan had. Everyone wanted to be him. Everyone wanted to play like him. People wanted to jump like him. Zion has recreated that. He does stuff that should be physically impossible at his height. He's a
freak of nature, if you will.
At his height, at his weight, he does stuff that should not be possible. Kids growing up, kids nowadays, they want to be like that. That is why Zion is going to have the biggest rookie endorsement in history of the NBA.
Zion's going to be floating in the big bucks.
Those are some very interesting thoughts. It'll be fun to see what happens with Zion in his rookie endorsement deal and how it plays out over the next couple months. That's all the time we have for today on the podcast, Three Guys and Ken. I'm your host, Catton Barman.
This is your favorite broadcaster, Cal Cook, here, signing off.
Johnny Schmoenvogt.
And Troy Wentworth. Don't forget to catch us next week on our episode about the Masters.
Three Guys and Ken is brought to you by Management 2300 and Danielle Harris. Thank you.